This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
And welcome to it, The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. And good morning to you, Mr. Bob Harris.
Good morning, Igor.
Well, and we have some show and tell we'll get to in a little bit. That's right. We are on Facebook Live. So check us out now, facebook.com/WESB107.5. That's how you can get your question to Bob. You can also email us, garden@WESB.com. Phone lines are down, so no live calls, unfortunately, this morning. So what's on the plan today to talk about?
I want to start out talking about the tomato plant. That's the most popular vegetable plant in the home garden. And so I want to try to explain, because I always get a lot of questions about the tomato. You know, my fruit isn't ripening. I don't have much fruit. Somebody's eaten it. So I want to try and give you some information on it.
First of all.
Yeah, first of all.
Bob, let me correct you.
Yeah.
Tomatoes are a vegetable.
Oh, yeah. You can call them vegetable, but technically they're a fruit.
I know. I thought it was funny. I would correct the master gardener.
Oh. I guess I just always call them a fruit, but, you know, to most of us, they're a vegetable. And I'll just leave it at that. It's a vegetable.
Okay.
And it's a good vegetable. They originated in Central America, made its way up to North America. For a long time, we thought they were poisonous. They are in the poisonous plant family.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But the fruit or the vegetable is not a poison. As a matter of fact, it's very nutritious. Real high in vitamins and minerals for us. So there are really basically two types. There's an indeterminate tomato and a determinate tomato. So I'll explain them. The determinate one is one that already has in its genes a determinate number of stems, leaves, flowers, and fruits or vegetables that it's going to grow. The indeterminate one is the it's going to grow and flower and leaf and continue on until the weather doesn't permit it anymore. So it just always grows almost. I shouldn't say that. I was going to say it's almost a perennial, but it's not. But it just keeps growing all year round. Now, most of us have the indeterminate, but there are the determinate ones. And those are usually the big beefsteak ones. They're going to grow to a certain height, produce a certain amount of flowers, certain amount of fruit, and then that's it. They're done. So the first month that you plant one, all the energy is going to go into leaf and stem growth, and then they're going to double their size in about 15 days. And then at about 10 or 13 leaves and 12 to 18 inches tall, they will make new branches and flower. Now, the branches are important. You have that center stem. The branches, and some of us call them suckers, the branches that come from below your first set of flowers are going to be ones you want to keep. They're going to be good. They're going to be strong enough to grow and flower and fruit. The ones above, you get about two branches above your first set of flowers. Those are probably not going to have enough time to fruit. And so we usually pluck them off to send more energy to the main stem and those branches below that first set of flowers. I'm hoping I'm making that clear. Now, there's a lot of different ways to grow a tomato. I should start with that, you know, and I'm going to give you a couple ways to do it. But that doesn't mean that's the only way. You can plant a tomato and just leave it go. Just water and fertilize it, and you're going to be fine. You're still going to get tomatoes. But if you're really picky about it And sometimes I start out being picky and then I give up. It does take some time.
You give up.
Yeah. And just let them go. But if you are picky about it and encourage those stems below that first set of flower and discourage, pick them off, cut them off, those ones that are two stems above that first set of flowers, you're going to have a stronger plant and bigger fruit. And quite often, fruit that can, a plant that can support that fruit. A lot of tomato plants through the years or through the season can start to get a rotten on the bottom. And that's not most of the time in Bradford. That's not due to a bug or disease or weather conditions. What it's due to is the plant has to supply so much calcium to the leaves. That's important, calcium to the leaves and the fruit to form a good, strong cell wall. So when you got too many leaves and too much fruit, the plant can't produce enough calcium to support it all. So it starts to try to get rid of some of the fruit and even some of the leaves. So they'll start to rot. And, of course, gravity does its job by pulling that rot to the very bottom of that tomato fruit, and it shows up that way. Now, in some areas of the country, they say it's due to lack of lime, so they have to add lime to their tomato plants. We don't have that problem here in Bradford. We have real high calcium-rich or lime-rich soil from all our clay. So we don't have to worry about that. As a matter of fact, you can do a lot of damage by adding lime to your tomato plants, because tomato plants like acidic soil, and lime makes it alkaline. So then it can struggle to grow when you start adding lime. Although there's going to be some lime in your fertilizer right off the bat, because fertilizers have a lot of acidic material in them, so they're counteracted with some calcium. Geez, I hope I made that clear. You're looking at me kind of funny.
I don't like tomatoes, so this whole thing.
Oh.
I'm waiting until you start talking about onions, and now you're talking with my language.
The most popular vegetable in the home garden. So
I'm still stuck on I don't know whether to be more offended by you calling a tomato a fruit.
Oh.
Or
a vegetable.
Or I don't necessarily like the term beefsteak.
Oh, really?
For a tomato.
Oh.
How dare they? That's false advertising all over the place. It's not a beef and it's not steak.
Well,
both are my favorite things, by the way.
Oh, geez, okay.
Beef and steak.
Well, us gardeners.
I'm just kidding.
Always have a funny way of naming plant parts. And, you know, it used to be way, way back in the 16, 1700s, there was true botanists, and they used Latin terms to name them, explaining the plant very well. Nowadays, we use a lot of funny names, catchy names, you know, which is all right by me.
Well, they're not fooling me. I know that's not beef and it's not steak.
Yeah, like cherry tomatoes, they're not cherries, and beef steaks, they're not beef. But it does explain the beef steak is a real large tomato and the cherry is a very small tomato. How the heck we get off on that?
I don't know.
So,
because you were worried about if you weren't explaining it right.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm stuck on this. So, but you are. You're explaining it quite well.
Oh, thanks. So, to maximize efficiency in photosynthesis, they say, and so you should thin out the amount of leaves. You don't want a real leafy tomato plant. Number one, it's going to block out sunlight. And that can retard the ripening of your fruit.
Okay.
And it can cause less air circulation to get through the plant, which can cause funguses. So it's a good idea to thin out some leaves. Don't take them all off, but do thin them to the point where you can see right through the plant. If you can see through it, then you've probably done good.
Now, what do the leaves actually do to help the tomato plant?
They're the ones that are kind of collect sunlight, make photosynthesis, and make all the minerals and vitamins and so on to make the plant grow its best and to support the fruit. So the leaves are extremely important.
Okay.
Within all plants. So pruning is pretty important for the plants suckering or getting rid of those other branches. Leave the two below the first set of flowers. Leave the two above the first set of flowers. All the other suckers on most tomato plants, most, pluck them off as soon as you see them so that you'll get better fruit on the rest of the plant. Now, the cherry tomatoes, most of the time I just let them all come because most cherry tomatoes are, all cherry tomatoes are what we call indeterminate. They're going to grow and fruit as long as the weather permits. So even a sucker way up may have time, you know, if we don't get an early frost, may have time to flower and fruit and even ripen. So let me talk a little bit about ripening, because that's where a lot of people get discouraged, say that my tomatoes are not ripening. Well, it may be because they have too many leaves, too much foliage, so the whole plant is demanding all the energy to support all those extra leaves. So plucking some off is a good idea. And plucking off some lets some sunlight in to help ripen some of those. But if you don't get ripe tomatoes, a good way to do that is when you're ready, you think they've grown to the point and you should be harvesting them, you can pick them, put them in a paper bag with a slice of apple or a slice of banana or just about any fruit. When that slice of fruit is going to give off an ethylene gas as it's rotting away inside that paper bag. And that ethylene gas is going to rush the ripening time on your tomatoes. Another way is to just bring them in and set them on the counter or windowsill. I wouldn't leave them outdoors unless you know that the chipmunks and the birds aren't going to bother them. Chipmunks and birds will bother the fruit. They'll peck at them quite a bit. Chipmunks will eat them right up. And I have a big problem with that at my house.
Alvin!
He always gets the very first tomato. I'll watch it and watch it, and I say, well, one more day it'll be ripe. Boom, he eats it. So that's how you can get some of your tomatoes to ripen. Another way is, everyone's always telling you, fertilize. Tomatoes are heavy feeders. And that's true, up to a point. Once the tomato plant has set fruit or the tomatoes are starting to grow on the plant, you should slack off on the fertilizer, because the fertilizer is encouraging more leaves, more stem growth. So if you slack off on the fertilizer, just giving it plain water now, and that water is real important. You got to keep them well watered all the time. Then the tomatoes will start to ripen. A lot of people think that, well, they're not ripening, maybe I better fertilize them some more. No, you're causing more plant growth and less ripening growth.
Right. That makes sense to even me.
Oh, okay.
You're doing a fine job explaining that.
So that's some of the problems with the tomato.
Now, what about some people I see, and some rigs, they have upside-down tomatoes?
Yeah, they work great.
Yeah, is there an advantage to that? Like, is it something like with gravity pulling it down? Do you get more plant that way? Or what's the deal with an upside-down tomato plant?
Basically, it's just a fascination, and tomato plants will do that, and it makes it easier to harvest, and you don't have to stake or cage them. Because tomato plants, if you don't stake or cage them, they're going to grow upright and then get heavy and fall over. And wherever they touch the ground, now they're real susceptible to any disease that, or fungus that may be in the soil, and there is going to be some, no matter what kind of soil you have. So growing them upside down in that 5-gallon bucket is pretty neat and interesting, and assures you that they're not going to droop over and hit the ground unless you haven't hung that upside down tomato high enough, which I've seen, and where people, they can hang it up 4 or 5 feet tall, but tomato plants can get quite tall.
Yeah.
Even 1 year, just for kicks.
Mm-hmm.
I over-fertilized and over-staked one tomato just to see how tall it would get. And I measured it at 14 and a half feet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was just fun. It wasn't fun to try and pick tomatoes way up there because that stepladder that I have is getting pretty wobbly. But it was fun.
But you have to experiment, being the mad scientist you are.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's just fun to try different experiments in your garden, because we all our gardens are a little bit different depending on how much sun, shade, what soil type, our habits of watering, fertilizing. They're all different. So sometimes it is fun to experiment. So it's always a good idea to plant more than one tomato plant. You don't need it for pollination.
I was going to say, does it cross-pollinate?
Can cross-pollinate, but then you won't see the results till the next year if you save the seeds. But to help experiment, and tomato plants don't even need bees to pollinate. They're one of those plants that are wind-pollinated. So it's even highly recommended that if you got it in a cage or a stake, that when you do get flowers, to once in a while shake that stake or shake the cage. That vibrates the flowers, releases some of the pollen that floats around, and pollinates the other flowers. So that's pollination. Now, bees will come to your tomato plants, and they'll help you out by pollinating too. But they don't rely on it. No, they are self-pollinating. So is that enough about tomato plants?
Sure.
Yeah.
We can take a pause here and thank our sponsor.
Okay.
And I'm looking at these beautiful plants that you brought here today, and we'll talk about
some more
plant things. And, of course, if you have a question about not only tomatoes or it could be a tree that you're curious about or whatever you have, email us garden@wesb.com or hop on our Facebook page right now. And give us a comment, and we'll see it in real time, and we'll get back to you, okay? It's The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM.
Is your lawn looking a little brown and ragged? They have what you need at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware. You'll find many options in the line of garden hoses, sprinkler heads, and fertilizers to turn that lawn back to the lush green carpet that we all love. But why stop there when you see the variety of decorative stone pavers, mulch, railroad ties, and landscape timbers? Let their staff at Worth W. Smith help you turn your backyard into the oasis you're looking for. If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
And welcome back to The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. Tune us in on Facebook Live right now because Bob Harris, the Master Gardener, brought in some show and tell. And first up, I see it's a plant with a lot of green leaves and some yellow flowers.
Yeah.
What do you have?
This is, to most of us, is called a black-eyed Susan. This is a great plant, loves the sun, can grow in part sun, and starts to bloom about this time of year, and has a tendency to spread or multiply quite a bit. And that can be due to the seeds that drop. Mostly it's due to that. So that at the end of a season, we may want to leave some of them old flowers. I know a lot of us with our perennials, after they bloomed and the flowers are what we call spent or done, we like to clip it off because it makes it look nice. But with a black-eyed Susan, if we're trying to multiply our patch of black-eyed Susan, we want to leave a few of them flowers for those seeds to ripen. Then they will automatically fall to the ground, become new plants, and we'll have a bigger bed of black-eyed Susans. So a real, real popular plant in Bradford because it just grows so strong, and that bright yellow color Geez, everybody likes the bright yellow color, I think.
Very easy to care for.
Easy to care for, yeah. Just virtually no care at all. So we're lucky that the black-eyed Susan is a great plant in our gardens. And come in a lot of different varieties. This is a shorter variety. This is called Little Gold Star. But there are taller ones that can grow 3-4 foot tall. This one here is going to grow, and I've got to look it up here, 14 inches. Again, I've talked about this before. You look on the tag. It'll tell you all about the hardiness, space it, when it's going to bloom, and mature height. Now, that height, you know, because of the weather conditions we have in Bradford, if it says 14 to 16 inches tall, it's probably going to be more like 12 to 14 inches tall. We really never reach the full potential of a plant in Bradford here.
Is that because of those pesky hills getting in the way of the sunlight?
Well, that and our weather just isn't real conducive to growing a plant to its fullest.
I see.
So keep that in mind that if it says it's going to grow 16, it's probably not. It's probably only going to be 14, maybe even only 12, depending on how much sunlight, how warm it is, and how early and late the frost come.
Gotcha.
So
it's hard to imagine frost right now because
it is, yeah.
For how hot it's been. It's going to be 88 today, I heard.
Oh, boy, yeah. Ugh. Yeah, we are almost welcome a frost here. So that's the black-eyed Susan. One of my new favorites.
Okay.
That I just kind of discovered this year.
That's a tall purple one.
Yeah, and it's going to come in other colors, too.
What is that?
It's called Agastache. It's a perennial, or also a mint. Now, this is not a mint that's going to take over your yard. You can tell it's a mint by, if you feel the stems, you'll see that they're kind of square, the stems.
Oh, wow.
They're not round. They're square.
Interesting.
And that is one of the factors in the mint family. But again, not going to go wild. Matter of fact, it's not going to go wild at all in your yard, this mint.
Now, does it actually smell like mint? Like,
yeah, well, here, let's find out.
let's find out.
Let's take a couple leaves.
Like you don't know.
And crush them up and give it a smell.
Oh, I see. They're green on the top and purple on the bottom.
Yeah, on this particular one, yeah.
Oh, neat.
Crush them right up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Oh. Highly scented.
Wow.
So it's also going to be a bug repellent, many bugs, but it's going to be an extreme hummingbird attracting plant because of the shape of the flower. And I know you can't really see, but it's a long tubular flower that really only hummingbirds and bees that have very long tongues can get to the nectar. That's what they're all the pollinators are after, is the nectar. And by collecting the nectar, they're going to get pollen on them, transfer it to the next plant. So,
did those flowers get bigger on this particular?
No, that's the size they get.
So that's all a hummingbird needs, those little tiny flowers.
Yep.
Because those, I didn't even realize they were flowers at first. I just thought they were like just, you know, poked out little pink, purple, violet things. I don't know.
Oh, each and this thing
those
just
little
flowers and flowers like crazy. It's one of the best flowering perennials I have in my garden. So I'm pretty excited about it.
Can you put that in a hanging basket, or is it supposed to be in the ground?
It's supposed to be in the ground. Mm. It wants to be in the ground because it's perennial. So it being in the ground is going to be its best place to assure that it's going to come back next year.
I ask that just because, you know, if it's going to attract hummingbirds, sometimes you might want to see them closer up. You know?
Yeah. You know, I suppose you could put, and one of mine is in a planter. I know I'm going to have to put it in the ground to overwinter it, but I wanted one right on my deck so I can watch the hummingbirds. But
that's what I was getting at. Yeah. So okay.
See, it's rated at a zone 5. Now we've always been a zone 4, a little colder, but we are edging towards that zone 5 now. So a perennial like this, we probably are going to be good with now. 10 years ago, it wouldn't have lasted for sure. But now that we have a warmer winters, longer growing season, this probably is going to be a good perennial. I don't know for a fact because I just started my first one. So
I'm just noticing some ants are on this. Is that a problem?
No, they're probably after that nectar inside is full of sugar. All ants are attracted. I don't see any ants.
No, they're right here. They're on there.
I see them. Okay.
Little tiny ones.
Yeah, they're after that sugary nectar in there, no doubt.
Okay.
Or, you know, another sign of ants on a plant is that you have aphids, and the ants will help protect the aphids because the aphids, as they feed on a plant, they convert the juices that they're eating into sugars, and the ants want the sugars. So the ants, they call it, the ants will farm the aphids. They will protect them against ladybugs and other people that are after the aphids. They'll protect them so that the ants can get that nectar.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was a neat sight then, the ants on there. Just little tiny ants, but yeah, they're after the sugars in there.
Oh, okay. So that doesn't mean it's a sick plant at all.
No, it doesn't mean it's sick at all.
Probably on the contrary. It's putting out what it's supposed to, that sweet nectar.
Yep. Great. And a lot of times, since I mentioned the aphids are sucking insects. They suck the juice out of a plant. Mm. And so they like to go to the tip because they don't have a real long, it's called a proboscis, to penetrate in to the plant to get the juices, so they go way up to the material top. That's not so hard, that's easy to pierce and get the juices out of.
I see.
So that's where you'll see the aphids, at the very top of the plant.
That's why, okay.
And a lot of times they just do their little job and don't harm the plant at all, but there are times when their populations get too high, and then we have to do something about them.
Okay. We have about a minute left in the show.
Oh, okay. Another one
about
of my
two minutes.
Favorites.
Let's give you two, because we started a minute late.
Do I say that all the time, Bob? Mine are my favorites.
They're all your favorites.
Yeah.
What is this one?
This one is called...
They look like pink Christmas trees on the top of this thing.
Yeah.
And pointy leaves. They have a lot. Oh.
This one here will accept the shade. You can grow this in the sun.
What is it?
It's astilbe, or some people call it astilbe, but I call it astilbe. And it's a nice deer-proof plant, too, by the way. So, blooms in the summer, and then it's done, but it'll still remain a nice green plant. It will multiply quite quickly, not by seed, but by multiplying the root system. So it becomes a really neat perennial, and that way it'll cover a nice big space in a few years. But the neat little flowers, and it's probably hard for you to see. Let me try to get closer. Mm-hmm. The flowers are real, real small.
Oh, yeah.
On it. And so it's going to attract pollinators, too, but the very, very small pollinators. Bumblebees and honeybees are not really attracted to it because the flowers are so doggone small, but other important pollinators that can become very beneficial, a lot of the flies are attracted to it, and the flies can what we call parasitize other bad insects like beetles. They'll lay their egg on a beetle, and that egg will hatch inside the beetle and grow and feed on that beetle till it kills it. So it attracts a lot of beneficial insects.
Okay, and then again, the plant is called?
Astilbe.
Okay, and real quick, I know we're going a little over.
Okay.
But we got an email since we were talking about tomatoes at the beginning of the show. We have Ken who wrote in, garden@wesb.com. Good morning, gentlemen, he says. I have two tomato plants in 5-gallon buckets. They are growing, but keep getting wilty and kind of droopy.
Yeah.
I'm trying to water them at least every other day and take them out of the hot sun when it's blazing. I have soil in the buckets a little over halfway, and will adding, he wants to know, will adding potting soil help with growth and the stabilization of the main stem.
Yes. But what you can do one other thing, too, and I haven't mentioned it this year, that hydrogen peroxide. Now, a lot of plants will wilt in that sun or even in a shady spot, even though they look like they're healthy. And that can be due to some fungus growing in the soil due to all this heat. And we have to water quite often. So all that heat and wetness is causing a fungus. The hydrogen peroxide. In your watering can, just go glug, 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 some hydrogen peroxide, which is liquid oxygen, and water your plant with that solution, and it's going to add oxygen into the soil, which is probably lacking and causing that plant to wilt because fungus is starting to grow in there or bacteria. And that hydrogen peroxide is going to combat against that and give the plant some oxygen again, and then it'll start to perk up. Now, it doesn't happen overnight, so you may have to do it two or three times, and maybe within a week or two that it'll start to perk your plant up. Or it just could be heat stress. I talked about that last week. Some plants are just real susceptible to heat stress. You can even have two different tomatoes side by side. One's wilty, one's not. One's accepting the heat, one is not accepting the heat. So it could even be that. But by adding that hydrogen peroxide, you're not going to do any damage. So it's a good place to start.
Excellent advice. Thank you so much, Bob. And we are all out of time. It's The Gardening Show. We'll talk to you next week on B107.5 FM.